Something Else by Melon Cafe, read by Interstellar Blue. 1. On the night before the most important test of Sungmin's life, he can't fall asleep. He's tossing and turning, left side, right side, coffin style with both arms crossed atop his chest. He's staring up at the ceiling, reciting the digits of pi inside of his head. When all else fails, he starts counting sheep. Of course, Sungmin could always pull an all-nighter. Most of his classmates are probably doing so out of necessity right now. But Sungmin is a firm proponent of good rest and a hearty breakfast, being a superior test strategy to Hail Marys and cramming until the sun comes up, and can afford to rest given his rigorous study regimen leading up to the Sunung. But instead he watches, bleary-eyed, as the numbers on his digital clock flip from 12:59 to 1 a.m., and then 1:28 to 1:29 a.m., before finally, at 1:31 a.m., Sungmin kicks off his heavy comforter and shuffles over to his desk. He might as well go over English grammar rules again. He's leaning over to turn on his desk lamp when he registers movement outside, a shadowy blur barely visible from the corner of his eye. Sungmin squints into the starlit darkness over at his neighbor's place, where a masked figure is lifting up the glass pane of an unlocked window and slipping quietly inside. Sungmin can make out the red and blue blocking and webbed design of their suit. A milk-hazed moonbeam illuminates the spider logo stitched across the mysterious figure's back. "Spider-Man," Sungmin murmurs, feeling delirious to himself. Spider-Man is climbing into Han Ji-sung's room. Yellow light soon pools onto the fire escape outside. A shirtless Ji-sung appears shortly after that, hair mussed to close the window and draw the blinds. There is darkness again. Sungmin's heart races, pumping pure adrenaline as he processes everything that's happened. If he couldn't sleep before, Sungmin definitely isn't going to now. Rosy-cheeked dawn breaks while Sungmin waits for Spider-Man to leave. He waits until the last possible second, until he has to go and take the Sunung at 9. He sees nothing, no one. The window remains shut. And so, on the morning of the most important test of Sungmin's life, he can't stop thinking about Spider-Man. He can't stop thinking about Han Ji-sung. Ultimately, though, it's none of Sungmin's business. He pushes last night out of mind as soon as their proctor, a thin-lipped woman with a severely tight bun, instructs them to begin. Once she hits the start button on the stopwatch perched on the podium up front, all thoughts of Spider-Man and Ji-sung immediately fade. Months of hard work and preparation carry Sungmin through the grueling 9 hours of the exam. Afterwards, when he and Ji-sung end up in the same subway car heading home, and Sungmin's watching the other boy nod off, chin dropping to chest before he jolts back awake, only to repeat the process a few seconds later, Sungmin wonders, how does Ji-sung know Spider-Man? He's never seen Ji-sung participate in any of the many, many debates their homeroom has had over whether or not Spider-Man should be considered a hero or a dangerous example for other would-be vigilantes. Sungmin hasn't formed an opinion either way. He figured Ji-sung was in the same boat. But now he suspects that Ji-sung's silence is his defense against self-incrimination, a way to avoid accidentally revealing the nature of whatever relationship he has with the newest Almost Avenger. Outside of Sungmin, no one in their class seems to have noticed Ji-sung's lack of conclusion, though. They don't try to pull him onto either side of the argument like they do with Sungmin before he rolls his eyes and says, "Leave me out of it." Ji-sung is good at blending into the background like that. A wallflower with the briefest flashes of efflorescence, like when he's performing a bit for the tight-knit circle of his friends, his heart-shaped smile when he secures one of the limited batches of melon bread the cafeteria puts out for lunch at noon, or the rhythmic drum of his fingers as he composes a song inside his head. Ji-sung had garnered some interest from everyone when he first transferred to their school in the middle of the semester last year, practically fresh off the plane from Malaysia, and still wearing street clothes because he didn't have time to buy his uniform yet when he stumbled into their class. He mumbled his way through his introduction. My name is Han Ji-sung. I moved here to live with my aunt because of an internship. In future, let's, get along. Before taking a seat at an empty desk beside their other exchange student. Felix had been in Korea for a handful of years at that point, but must have retained enough of that feeling of foreignness and Korean diasporism to quickly bond with Ji-sung over it. They're inseparable now. As a textbook introvert, Felix is bright and well-liked. Ji-sung is occasionally spotlighted by this second-hand radiance, but more often than not goes overlooked. Ji-sung doesn't seem to mind the shadows, though. If anything, within their obscurity, he seems to thrive. Ji-sung's always slipping away somewhere, Sungmin's noticed. Ji-sung will be standing somewhere and be able to disappear within the time span of a blink. None of the teachers make a fuss about it or anything, which is strange considering how often Ji-sung cuts class and opts out of study period to go off to God knows where. When Sungmin brings up Ji-sung's glaring string of absences, glaring to nobody except for himself, their homeroom teacher simply waves it off. Moon-sam says with a chuckle, "He's got more important things to do than stick around here, Sungmina." Referring to the fact that the internship Ji-sung moved to Korea for is with Three Racha Industries, one that will set him up for life. It's the kind of internship experience that, once you put on your resume, is guaranteed to get you into a top college and into a well-paying job after that. Plus, there are rumors that the project Ji-sung is involved with is pretty high-level stuff. He often gets phone calls and summons from the CEO himself, Christopher Bang. "I've never seen you fixate on someone like this," his best friend Jung-in once pointed out. "I'm not fixating," Sungmin had vehemently denied. "You complain about him as often as you complain about logarithms, which is kind of a lot. Are you jealous of him or something?" Jealous or something else? Sungmin considered the two possibilities. Jealousy. Sungmin's a top student with nothing to show for it, who can't afford to skip class because his future rides on his rank, and whose parents don't have the connections to land him anything other than a good letter of rec, which is compelling to an extent but does not ultimately curry favor. How did Ji-sung land such a prestigious position? His grades are middling at best, and he doesn't seem to be any cleverer or stupider than the average high school senior. His family isn't loaded either. Ji-sung and his aunt live in a modest apartment building. She's a hairdresser at an upscale salon in Gangnam. But jealousy doesn't completely ring true. Sungmin's never been the type to extensively compare himself to others, or to pass judgment on whether or not someone deserves something when there might be more to them than meets the eye. Such things are out of control. Sungmin would much rather focus on what he can, doing it consistently, and doing his best. Which leaves something else. Ji-sung is an aberration in Sungmin's highly organized and methodical life. He's someone who sticks out like a sore thumb when Sungmin goes to collect homework because Ji-sung isn't physically there to hand it in. He is the absence of a familiar shape when Sungmin's eyes scan the classroom for attendance. He is an anomaly that Sungmin can't explain when they're assigned to work in pairs, and there's an odd number of people despite there being an even number of students enrolled. Ji-sung is a half-finished carton of milk left behind at the cafeteria table, or Felix's sudden availability to hang out because of a last-minute cancellation of plans. Sometimes, Ji-sung is a secret that Sungmin wants to be privy to, or an inside joke that he wants to understand the punchline of. There's so little that Sungmin actually knows about the other boy. For example, how does Ji-sung know Spider-Man? Maybe they met at Three Racha headquarters. Maybe Spider-Man is handsome and charming beneath his mask. Maybe he caught a glimpse of Ji-sung's heart-shaped smile, just that brief flash of efflorescence, and was charmed by Ji-sung in turn. Maybe they hit it off. Maybe that's the reason Sungmin didn't see Spider-Man leave before dawn, and why Ji-sung has fully fallen asleep on the train. Because someone kept him up all night, just like how the two of them kept Sungmin up. He reminds himself, it's none of your business. But even as he gets up to take the empty seat next to Ji-sung to steer away potential pickpockets, holding his breath when Ji-sung's head drops with a thump against his shoulder from the forward momentum of the train, Sungmin kind of wishes it was his business. He kind of wishes that Ji-sung were his. "Not jealousy," Sungmin had answered Jung-in back then. "It's something else." "What is it?" the younger boy prods. Sungmin buries his face into his workbook to hide the scarlet flush of his cheeks. A crush. Two. Here's the thing. Sungmin would never willingly join a game of spin the bottle. He was just sitting back and chatting with Yeji when Leah and Chani came in and joined their lament about how short the grace period between the end of the Sunung and the start of the college application season is, which is followed by the appearance of Sana and Hyunjin, then Jisung and Felix, until enough people had broken off from the main party downstairs for a reprieve in the quieter secondary location of Selim's bedroom in the attic. Sonu, after polishing off the rest of his beer in three massive gulps, starts waving the empty bottle around with a sparkle of mischief glinting like light behind frosted glass through the inebriation in his eyes. He sings songs to the group, "Anyone down for a few rounds?" which prompts a circle to form before Sungmin, slightly drunk himself, has the cognitive function to make his escape out the door. The first few rounds are predictably rowdy. Sungmin elects to drink rather than answer the question of who was the last person you had a sex dream about, and ignores the good-natured ribbing of everybody calling him a square for keeping the truth so close to his chest. He picks Dare on his next turn and has to drink again to avoid the inevitable, "I dare you to tell us the last person you had a sex dream about," the answer to which is, of course, sitting right across from him in the circle. Jisung's lips are semi-permanently puckered from downing a cup of lemon juice earlier during his turn. Hyunjin passes the bottle to Yeonjun, who spins it with gusto, the center star on the Heineken logo like a ballerina mid-pirouette. The bottle eventually lands on Jisung. Jisung never chooses truth. "Dare." Yeonjun smirks. 7 minutes in heaven with the cutest boy in the room. Said room breaks out into laughter, but it's somewhat muted. Not as fun when everyone knows the most obvious choice. Mino Sanbei is Jisung's long-standing crush, and it's not exactly a secret that Mino is sweet on him, too. The beer that Sungmin is sipping on tastes bitter on his tongue. But Jisung hesitates for some reason. He casts his wide doe eyes over towards Sungmin, gaze lingering like second-hand smoke, and for some reason Sungmin feels compelled to come to Jisung's rescue. Maybe he cast those wide doe eyes upon Spider-Man too once upon a time. Sungmin chugs the rest of his drink and stands. "Come with me," he says, extending his hand across the center of the circle, willing his fingers not to tremble in weight. Jisung accepts. There is a chorus of discordant "ooh" that follows them all the way into the closet. Sungmin spares Mino a glance as he closes the door, expecting disappointment or perhaps bewilderment in kind, but Mino only looks amused. Selim's closet is small and cramped, overflowing with clothes that Sungmin nudges aside a pile of in order to make enough space for him and Jisung to sit down on the carpeted floor. He feels around for a light switch, but the bulb above their heads is blackened with filament, burnt out a long, long time ago. "You're not claustrophobic, are you?" Sungmin asks. "No." He blows a sigh of relief. "Whew, that's good. What would you do, though, if I was?" "I don't know," Sungmin shrugs. "I hadn't considered that when I dragged you in here." Jisung's breath still smells like lemons. "Why did you drag me in here? Chivalry? Pity? A combination of both? You looked like a deer in headlights back there, but don't worry," Sungmin assures him and pitches his voice into a whisper. He leans in closer. "Your secret is safe with me." "Secret?" Jisung parrots him, two octaves too high, seemingly flustered by Sungmin's proximity. "What secret?" "The reason why you didn't want to kiss Mino Sanbei, or anyone else for that matter. It's because of your boyfriend, right?" "My boyfriend?" He figures Jisung is playing dumb. "I saw him the other night climbing in through your bedroom window." He wishes he could see what sort of expression Jisung is making right now, but he's sitting too close and the closet is far too dark. "You're dating Spider-Man, right?" Sungmin's met with silence both inside the closet and beyond. He suspects the group has probably dispersed in the interest of giving them privacy, as well as the plausibility to make up rumors about the things Jisung and Sungmin could have gotten up to after they left. "It's fine," Sungmin says. "We don't have to talk about it if you don't want to. I won't tell anyone either way." I think the 7 minutes are up. Ji-sung rises and Sung-min moves to follow suit, but his shoulder knocks against a section of heavy coats, which momentarily throws off his balance. Sung-min stumbles forward into Ji-sung, who catches him with ease, forearms flexing to bear the brunt of Sung-min's weight. Has Ji-sung always been this strong? Sorry. Sung-min quickly detangles himself from Ji-sung's steadying grip, annoyed at his treacherous heart for beating so loudly despite the bruise of discovering the boy you like is dating somebody else still purpling like poison berries, smarting and fresh. Sung-min's far too pragmatic to yearn for somebody who's already in a relationship, much less somebody who is in a relationship with Spider-Man. He knows he should get over Ji-sung. He just wishes the rest of his body would catch up to the speed of his brain. Sung-min opens the closet door out into Selim's empty room. As suspected, everyone's gone and made themselves scarce. He's about to join the rest of the party downstairs when Ji-sung's hand wraps itself loosely around Sung-min's wrist. Wait. Oh no. Can Ji-sung feel the sudden thundering of Sung-min's pulse beneath his fingertips? Sung-min wrenches his arm back just in case. Under a heat map, Sung-min would bloom scarlet in all the places where Ji-sung's touched him tonight. What is it? He asks. Nothing, Ji-sung replies, fingers curling up into a fist by his side. Just, thanks. Sung-min nods. He doesn't know what else to say. No problem doesn't seem right in this context. For obvious reasons, Sung-min has a huge problem with Ji-sung dating Spider-Man. He looks beseechingly into Ji-sung's eyes. All he can offer is a flimsy, "Be careful, all right?" Three. Throughout the rest of the party, Sung-min is subjected to everyone's light teasing, smooching noises following him wherever he goes, enthusiastic claps on the back as if he just won them the big game, all of which he handles with good humor. Sung-min keeps mum on the details of what really went down despite Sonu's prodding, and expects that as people sober up and the weekend comes to pass, that would be the end of that. But then Monday rolls around, and if anything, it feels like the whole school now knows, and has something to say about Sung-min dragging Ji-sung into a closet. Whether they say it to his face or not is a different matter altogether. I'm afraid to pick my nose, Sung-min tells Jong-in over lunch. The constant gawking is ruining Sung-min's enjoyment of his bowl of Twenjang Jjigae. Maybe if you dig deep enough, it might scare off whoever sees, and that'll mean a few less eyes on you until this whole thing eventually blows over. Or, if you dig so deep you accidentally give yourself a lobotomy, then you wouldn't have the brain function to care that people are staring. Even better. Sung-min glowers at him. Quick question, do you genuinely believe you would make a good elementary school teacher in charge of molding all those impressionable young minds?
Sung-min and Ji-sung kissing in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
Sung-min draws his thumb into a slicing motion across his neck. He can only assume the fervor with which the rumors of his and Ji-sung's entanglement are spreading is highly exacerbated by boredom. After everyone collectively puts their social lives on hold for the weeks leading up to the Sunung, in addition to their favorite on-again, off-again campus couple being definitively off-again, the rumor mill has truly run dry. And this, in conjunction with Ji-sung's quiet notoriety, and the fact that Sung-min is fresh meat in an ecosystem hungry for salacious news, makes the two of them a delicious aperitif before someone else cooks up some actual drama to feast on in due course. Still, the knowledge that Sung-min will be, at most, an afterthought in a few weeks' time doesn't make the current reality of people whispering about him, and at great length, too, any less uncomfortable. Sung-bae doesn't look like he's faring much better, Jong-in comments, using the same spoon to gesture across the cafeteria to where Ji-sung is practically taking cover beneath his table. If he could physically sink beneath the ground and live out the rest of his life as a mole person, he would. Ji-sung only likes attention when it's on his terms. Fortunately, Felix looks like he's fending off the worst of the peanut gallery, deflecting conversations where he can, but even his own gravitational pull isn't enough to completely redirect people's rabid curiosity. Sung-min recognizes the leader of the current Inquisition, Song-shik, who is gesticulating wildly with his arms. Sunlight retracts off of the ice on his vintage Piaget watch, blinding everyone in a 2-meter radius around him. People are opportunistic enough to flock towards Songshik in the hopes that one of the diamonds dislodges itself and finances the acquisition of a modest apartment building in Gangnam. There are some things money can't buy, though, which includes an invite to the prestigious Three Roches Industries Christmas party. "So you and Sungmin aren't really a thing?" Songshik's voice carries across the cafeteria, aided in part by the way everyone quiets down to hear Jisung's response. "No, we aren't." "So that means you're going stag, then?" "I wasn't." "Of course," Songshik barrels forward. "If you're looking for a plus one, I'd be more than happy to volunteer. I've been looking for an end to this thing for weeks, but the guest list is ridiculously exclusive. Even my dad, of all people, couldn't bag himself an invite." Songshik, "What's the dress code, by the way? Is it like black tie, or are people going to be wearing ugly Christmas sweaters?" Songshik, "And what time should I pick you up, or are you picking me up since you're the one who asked me to go?" "I didn't," Jisung starts, but likely figures that his protests are destined to fall on deaf ears. From halfway across the cafeteria, Jisung casts those wide doe eyes over at Sungmin once more. It's just as likely that Jisung was looking around for any sort of lifeline, and Sungmin happened to be the one most eager to come to Jisung's rescue. Maybe that was the case during the spin the bottle as well. Or maybe Sungmin and Songshik aren't so different after all, both looking for an invitation to places and people to which they don't belong. Sungmin marches over to Jisung's lunch table with the barest semblance of a plan and something approaching determination. He can't meet Jisung's gaze when he announces loudly, "Sorry, Songshik, I'm actually going as his plus one." Audible gasps. "Omo, omo," someone murmurs in the crowd. Songshik blinks. "But Jisung says that you two aren't dating." His usual bravado is visibly punctured by Sungmin and his sterling reputation. Surely someone like Sungmin wouldn't lie about something as silly as this? Plus the rumors about him and Jisung at Selim's party the other night. Sungmin tries to affect nonchalance through a shrug. "Because the Christmas party will be our first date. We'll only be officially dating after that." Felix chuckles, and the sound of it dispels the mounting tension, like how the first crack of thunder dislodges rain from gathering storm clouds. "It's just like Sungmin to make a fuss about semantics," he says. The people around them laugh, too. Poor Jisung, they're probably thinking, having to play along with Sungmin's arbitrary rules. "Can I talk to you for a second?" Jisung asks. Collective laughter turns into a chorus of coos that follow them all the way out the cafeteria before it's cushioned by the closing of the door leading into an empty classroom. Jisung rounds on him immediately. "Why do you keep doing that?" "Doing what?" "Giving people the wrong impression of us." "Would it be so bad," Sungmin replies, "if people really believed that we were together?" "It's just that I..." Jisung swallows. He lets the sentence hang. Sungmin watches as it slowly dissolves like an antacid in water, another secret he can only let Sungmin guess at but never confirm. Jisung switches tracks. "In any case, don't you already have someone that you like?" In bewilderment, Sungmin asks, "What makes you say that?" "That stupid look you get on your face, the one when your eyes soften at the corners and your mouth gets all squiggly because you're holding back a grin. I saw it at the party when you were asked about..." Jisung rushes through the next part. "The last person you had a sex dream about. Only briefly, but I saw it." "I don't have a look." "You make it when you're killing it on a crossword puzzle, or when you're geeked out about something. You definitely have a look." "Do not." "Do too." "Do whatever," Sungmin huffs. "This is childish." Jisung mutters under his breath, "Do two times infinity." "It's only a crush," Sungmin insists, crossing his arms across his chest. He uncrosses them almost immediately, not wanting to seem defensive. "It's not that serious, and they're not someone I'm ever going to pursue. So it's okay if you tell people that you're dating me. I mean, you can't exactly tell people that it's Spider-Man, right?" There's a pause as Jisung considers Sungmin's offer. Sungmin hadn't put much thought behind it when he said it. It was just an idea that sprung up in his head. But Sungmin thinks he might wither and die if Jisung were to turn him down. Did he sound too eager when proposing it? Is Jisung annoyed at how often Sungmin's been butting into his business lately? "You should go out with me for real," Jisung says eventually. Sungmin's heart climbs, to the Christmas party, I mean, and then plummets to the ground. "You were really planning on going stag?" Ji-sung coughs to clear his throat. The life of a superhero, you know? Highly unpredictable. I guess you do run the risk of him disappearing on you at a moment's notice. You can't exactly plan for anything when it comes to Spider-Man. The same could be said for you, Sungmin says. He doesn't notice the way Ji-sung stiffens like early-onset rigor mortis and continues musing aloud as he starts making his way to the door. You know the old adage of the longer you're with someone, the more alike the two of you start to look? He throws his parting words over his shoulder and doesn't look back. Sometimes you might as well be Spider-Man to me. I don't know who either of you are beneath your masks. In the end, Sungmin chooses from his closet a burgundy sweater vest paired over a button-up and slacks. His sister makes him take a Santa hat with him, cotton ball tipped tinseled with silver and his nickname Minnie embroidered across the brim. A touch of holiday cheer so it looks less like you're attending the 50th annual Loser Symposium, she explains. Sungmin thinks the burgundy sweater vest is plenty festive enough and sticks the Santa hat in his back pocket, letting it dangle like a tail as he treks across the street towards Ji-sung's place. Nuna might be onto something, though, because when Ji-sung answers the door, it's followed by a burst of laughter as Ji-sung takes in Sungmin's ensemble with an exaggerated up and down. Are you here to cancel on me because you've been invited to give the keynote speech at the nerd convention instead? Whatever. Sungmin begrudgingly retrieves the Santa hat from his pocket and fixes it atop his head. Am I jolly enough for you yet? Ji-sung is dressed in a scarlet handmade sweater with the letter J stitched across the chest. Let me grab my jacket and then we can leave. But before Ji-sung can even finish the sentence, Ji-sung's aunt appears from behind him, fingers curling around the collar of Ji-sung's sweater to keep him in place. She's around Ji-sung's height but exudes a menacing aura that could asphyxiate a room. Han Ji-sung, I told you that I wanted pictures first, did I not?
Imo, you must be Sungmin.
She grins at him with a set of perfectly straight teeth that simultaneously gives off the impression of filed down fangs. Sungmin nods in response. Lovely to meet you. I'm Ji-sung's aunt. She ushers them both inside and poses them by the Christmas tree set up inside of the living room. The 10-story building next door blocks off all natural light, so every nook and cranny of the apartment is crammed with lamps and candles, bathing it in a drowsy amber glow. Ji-sung's aunt has curated a rather eclectic maximalist vibe when it comes to her decor, the polar opposite to the millennial beige tones of Sungmin's own home. There are books stacked high into piles with dog-eared pages and broken, well-loved spines. Art supplies scattered like dust that which also serves dual, sometimes triple, functions, e.g. the easel by the doorway that acts as a coat rack as well. Imagine my relief, Ji-sung's aunt says, posing Sungmin like a storefront mannequin, nudging him closer and closer to Ji-sung, to find out you're the reason why my nephew's always sneaking around. Honestly, I thought it was drugs. Hard drugs, Ji-sung replies, the corners of his lips twitching, trying to hold back a smirk. Sungmin's actually my supplier. Sungmin nods. Just cocaine for now, but I might start trusting him to move some ketamine for me next. Ji-sung's aunt rolls her eyes. Whatever helps pay for college, right? She snaps a series of photos, barking out instructions like, "Closer, arms around each other's waists, please," and "Relax, you're both standing stiffer than a board. Shouldn't you be at that stage in your relationship where you can't keep your hands off each other?" Sungmin tries to play it cool, but Ji-sung's steady encroachment into his personal space and the weight of his hand resting on Sungmin's hip is really messing with his head. It's the reason why Sungmin smiles dopely and says, "Yes," when Ji-sung's aunt asks if they're excited about their first Christmas together. There's a matchstick kind of warmth associated with the word first, because it implies a series of Christmases to follow. Reality is the breath sent to snuff out that fledgling flame. Sungmin doesn't want to spend the next however many Christmases keeping up this charade. On the walk to the subway station, Sungmin says, it must be hard having to keep a secret from the people closest to you, including your own family. Ji-sung kicks a pebble and sends it careening down the road. A sadness creeps into his overall demeanor, weighing him down like an added winter coat. I don't want them to treat me any differently. Plus, the more people that know, the more dangerous it becomes. I get it, Sungmin says, wishing he had something better, more reassuring to add. But just that basic empathy seems to be enough. Ji-sung smiles at him, bangs blowing windswept in front of his eyes. "You're not worried that it might be dangerous for you too?" Ji-sung asks. "What do I have to worry about?" Sung-min halts in order to theatrically flex his muscles, biceps then triceps, before he turns around to show off some trapezius action for good measure. "When I'm walking around locked and loaded like this?" "Of course," Ji-sung says, as if appeasing a child, and is almost convincingly sincere. He could make for a pretty good actor if he could manage to push past the embarrassment of it all. "You're extremely buff and never escaping the roided-up allegations, Sung-min-ah. It's the reason why you're always wearing those stupid sweater vests, right? Because your guns are too large to be contained by sleeves. And why all my pens are reinforced with titanium steel, otherwise they'd snap in half in my hands. I heard a rumor the other day about how you misplaced your library card at school, so you uprooted the building, basement level and all, to try and shake it loose. I knew right away it wasn't true, though. You would never misplace your library card." Sung-min scoffs. "Spider-Man is lucky I chose to be a law-abiding citizen and not a criminal mastermind instead." Ji-sung peers at him with an expression that's hard to decipher, some secret code hidden in the crinkle of his eyes that Sung-min wants to smooth out like a note passed in class beneath hopeful fingertips. "You're not wrong," Ji-sung says as a crowd of college kids push past them on the escalator down to the station, and Ji-sung's hands find their way to Sung-min's waist once again. Warm breath tickles against the shell of Sungmin's ear. "Spider-Man would definitely have a weakness for someone like you."
Four.
The Christmas party passes without incident. Sung-min hard launches their relationship on Instagram with one of the pictures that Ji-sung's aunt took after a few major edits, including the filter he had to slap on top of it to disguise how Sung-min's face is even redder than his hat. He and Ji-sung then proceed to spend the next few days leading up to New Year's Eve together too, to keep up the ruse. They also buy matching backpacks, same color and everything, to wear to school and really seal the deal. At some point, between TV show binges and riffling through record store boxes together, stealing food off each other's plates and taking turns yielding the last drumstick whenever they hit up their local fried chicken restaurant, Sung-min and Ji-sung become genuine friends. This makes it that much harder for Sung-min to remember sometimes that certain aspects of their relationship are still for show. Rather, Sung-min forgets up until the moment Ji-sung feeds him some cock and bull excuse to ditch Sung-min in the middle of their plans. Sometimes Ji-sung doesn't even give Sung-min his excuse in person, just sends Sung-min a text riddled with spelling errors because he's typing on the go after leaving Sung-min in the lurch. He can't get to Spider-Man fast enough, it seems. "Don't you get tired of being treated like a booty call all of the time?" Sung-min asks as they're walking home from school one day. Ji-sung predictably pretends not to hear him, feigning interest in a bungeoppang-shaped cloud in the sky. "But someone bit the tail end first," he points and says. Sung-min doesn't know why Ji-sung has never once outright admitted to meeting up with Spider-Man whenever he disappears like that. He's also so cagey whenever Sung-min asks if the two of them have been out on an actual date, or do anything that actual couples in a committed relationship do. He wants to know if Spider-Man is as good of a boyfriend to Ji-sung as Sung-min is only pretending to be. He's contemplating this on his way to an interview for a lucrative tutoring gig his mom recommended him for. Sung-min detours down a back alley he's never walked through, but calculates to be the fastest route to catch his bus and make it to the interview on time. It's uncanny the difference a block and a half from the main street can make, back here where there's only the muffled sounds of traffic and the recent bout of rain making the cracked asphalt look slicker than an oil spill in the dark. The alleyway is illuminated by a distant mattress store sign that hasn't seen a customer or sold a mattress in years, a white fluorescent beacon that Sung-min beelines towards. His legs are pumping with efficiency beneath him, originally with haste for fear of being late, but now he's running simply out of fear, period. There's a growing sense of dread building inside of him, one Sung-min's not entirely sure is unfounded. He feels like prey being hunted back here. Sung-min's nearly in the clear when a body suddenly slams him into the wall, not on purpose but as collateral to being violently shoved himself. The man is older with salt and pepper hair and a twice-split lip. He's clutching a briefcase to his chest, refusing to give it up to his two assailants, both boulder-like men with blackened teeth like Indian corn kernels glinting menacingly when they sneer. "Unlucky for you, brat," the taller one says, referring to Sungmin, "to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and stupid enough to look me directly in the face. I can't exactly leave a witness who can give a sketch artist a description of me alive." "No hard feelings, kid. It's bad for business," the other one adds. Sungmin is slow on the uptake because he looks directly at him, too. Sungmin closes his eyes even though he knows it's futile. They're going to kill him regardless. Sungmin should open them again and face his death bravely, head on. He should know exactly who to haunt when he comes back again as a ghost. But the first thing Sungmin sees when he opens his eyes is not his would-be assailants. Instead, it's Spider-Man's graceful entrance as he drops to the ground from some high-up perch. When Spider-Man straightens up to his full height, he's much shorter than Sungmin, imagined and more subtly built. There is a cocksure aura to him, though, that adds to Spider-Man's overall stature, making him seem larger than life. Standing between Sungmin and what would have been certain death, to him, Spider-Man might as well be 10 meters tall. "I've never been one to turn down a chance to save a damsel in distress," he announces. Spider-Man's voice is slightly modulated and distorted through his suit. "Am I the damsel in this scenario?" Sungmin finds the wherewithal to ask. A strange sense of familiarity tugs at him like the sleeve of a sweater on a nail, unraveling the tightly knit fabric of his fear. A wave of calmness washes throughout him, even though Sungmin knows he's not out of the woods yet. Spider-Man replies, "Would you have preferred a dork stranger in danger? Because I can come back and do a take two if you like." Whatever clever quip Sungmin would have come up with dies as the tall boulder man grips his knife and takes a hack without warning. The serrated edge rips through the air, Spider-Man having successfully sidestepped the attack, and he painfully twists the boulder man's wrist before he can complete the arc of his swing. The knife clatters uselessly onto the ground. Sungmin reflexively kicks it away, watches as it slides out of reach beneath a nearby dumpster swallowed up by the shadows. Sungmin hears the older man, their original target, whimper. He grips his briefcase tighter and quickly scampers away, disappearing around the corner. Sungmin should probably do the same, but suffers under the false impression that Spider-Man might need him as backup. He doesn't, obviously. Spider-Man makes quick work of the two assailants. Despite being hidden behind a mask, Sungmin gets the impression that Spider-Man hasn't even broken a sweat. Thwarting a mugging attempt must be a walk in the park compared to uncovering a dastardly scheme, or single-handedly stopping a nuclear arms race like he did the other week. "Should I call the police or something?" Sungmin asks as Spider-Man webs the Boulderman's arms behind their backs. It's fascinating to see the thin, silk-like material function effectively as handcuffs. Sungmin thinks secretly about pocketing some in order to study the fibers under a microscope. "My suit automatically dispatches the nearest squad car whenever I enter combat mode. They'll be here any minute now." "Whoa. Is there a built-in bathroom in that thing, too?" "Yeah, dude, of course. I basically shit my pants before every fight." "I didn't know superheroes got scared." "Not exactly," Spider-Man smirks. "It's just to ensure that I'm a little lighter on my feet." "You're ridiculous," Sungmin says. It's probably a prerequisite to dating someone like Chi-Sung. Sungmin ignores the dull, stabbing sensation through his heart. He shouldn't be anything other than grateful right now. "In any case, thanks, you saved my life." "It's nothing." "It might be nothing for you, but for me it's the relief of knowing that I get to see another day, and potentially the Lottie Giants winning a KBO title during my lifetime." "Buddy, we've got to find you a better reason to live." When Sungmin catches sight of his watch, he realizes that he's already missed his interview. Oh well. Having such a close brush with death really puts everything into perspective. He has a better grasp on the things that truly matter and the things that don't. Right now, all Sungmin wants to do is to go home, brush his teeth, and take a really hot bath. It's not until he takes a tentative step towards the bus stop to leave that his knees give way beneath him, buckling like a rotted plywood under the onslaught of a storm. Spider-Man catches him easily. Sungmin forces a half-hearted chuckle. "Maybe I am a damsel in distress. Are you hurt anywhere?" "I don't think so. I might just be in shock." Sungmin is remarkably calm, if that's the case. Outwardly, anyway. Internally, Sungmin's whole body feels out of whack. He feels lightheaded in a way that has nothing to do with how Spider-Man has yet to let him go, or the strangely familiar weight of his arms. "Sungmin, are you alright? You know my name?" Sungmin thinks he's making eye contact with Spider-Man, but it's hard to tell through the mask. All he can really see is his own reflection in the one-way glass material of Spider-Man's goggled eyes. Does Ji-sung talk about me? All the time. A wave of warmth washes over Sungmin. He doesn't talk about you at all. Sungmin can't help the jab. It's the only one he'll ever manage to land against someone like Spider-Man. Right, let's get you home, okay? Sungmin is about to ask how Spider-Man plans on getting on a bus or calling them a cab while dressed so conspicuously as himself, but whatever air Sungmin's managed to stockpile in his lungs gets knocked out of him when he's unceremoniously tossed onto Spider-Man's back. Hey! It's this or bridal style, your choice. Sungmin wraps his arms tightly around Spider-Man's shoulders and neck. He feels like a koala, or like Kristen Stewart in that vampire movie that Hyunjin made him watch last week. They swing through the sky, weaving between tall buildings and over the traffic-congested streets of Seoul below. Sungmin doesn't have a fear of heights but develops one during those split seconds where Spider-Man's between webs, letting go of one before he shoots another, and those freeze-framed moments of pure suspension. Sungmin just as quickly conquers those fears a split second later, addicted to the weightlessness of soaring, of being above it all. Sungmin is windswept and breathless when they finally arrive safely back at his apartment. Spider-Man deposits Sungmin into his desk chair. How did you know this was my bedroom window? He asks. Lucky guess. Thanks again for everything, Sungmin says. Good luck to your Lottie Giants or whatever. Maybe I'll catch a game or two sometime. Take Ji-sung with you, on a proper date, Sungmin adds. Spider-Man is frozen, having already climbed halfway through Sungmin's window, 1 foot in and 1 foot out. It can't be easy being your boyfriend. Even if Ji-sung's a private person in general, it must be hard not to be able to talk about the person you're seeing, if and when he sees you at all. He's met with continued silence. Maybe he's activated some latent guilt inside of Spider-Man? Regardless, Sungmin refuses to let up. His nagging serves two purposes, first and foremost to spur Spider-Man into action, but also to get his grievances off of his chest. What's the point of saving the world if you can't protect the happiness of the one you're supposed to love the most? Sungmin puts forth. Clearly his brain might still be addled from the shock of his near-death experience because he unthinkingly declares, "If you're not careful, I'm going to steal him away." This provocation, finally, is what gets Spider-Man to react. He smirks as he climbs the rest of the way through Sungmin's window. A challenge, a taunt, he says, "Okay then, let's see you give it your best shot." Five. Valentine's Day, Sungmin figures, is as good a time as any to lure Ji-sung away from his deadbeat boyfriend and into Sungmin's awaiting arms, which is, wow, crazy to think and a thought that he doesn't want to interrogate too deeply, because it is not lost on Sungmin that what he's planning to do is less than honorable. Throughout his scheming, Sungmin periodically questions if he should feel more of a moral compunction over intentionally trying to break up a relationship. But this is mostly eclipsed by how much Sungmin likes Ji-sung, and how much he thinks Ji-sung might like him too. Ji-sung hasn't said so in as many words, but Sungmin quietly holds onto a closed fistful of hope that his feelings might be reciprocated, and that all of the time they've spent together, the inside jokes they now share, and the way Ji-sung's eyes go soft at the corner when he doesn't think Sungmin can see him might actually mean something. It has to mean something, right? And also the way Spider-Man egged him on after Sungmin threatened to steal Ji-sung away. How irritating. How ungrateful. At best, Spider-Man is overly confident in the security of Ji-sung's devotion. Worse, though, is the possibility that Ji-sung's boyfriend doesn't like Ji-sung enough to care. At least not enough to fight for him the way that Sungmin is willing to fight for him. But then why fight for something you already have? For all his careful plotting and scheming and circular justifications, Sungmin can't bring himself to go through with his plan to sweep Ji-sung off of his feet. They're hanging out in Ji-sung's room, and Sungmin's got tickets to a special after-hours tour of the Coex Aquarium burning a hole in his wallet. Bank account drained and a special favor to Jae-hee owed, Sungmin had planned the perfect date from beginning to end, which would culminate into giving a confession so heartfelt and charming that Ji-sung would have no choice but to leave his boyfriend for Sungmin. What he believed to be a foolproof plan turns out to have more than a few hairline cracks, wide enough to let the doubt creep in. It weighs on Sungmin, this sense that to go through with his plan would be to cross a line that Sungmin can never come back from without being branded for life. Providing Ji-sung with a cover by pretending to be his boyfriend had been done with noble intentions. However, if Sungmin were to take advantage of this situation by confessing, it would cast a dubious light over everything that's transpired over the last few months. Especially if Sungmin's unable to convince Ji-sung that this whole endeavor was undertaken without some sort of ulterior motive. Sungmin doesn't want to appear like some sort of puppet master in the shadows, carefully pulling all the strings. This sudden turn towards inaction is annoying. Sungmin hates changing his mind after he'd already set it on something. "If you keep up your spinning, you're gonna drill a hole down into the center of the earth," Ji-sung says, a boon to Sungmin's equally swirling thoughts. Ji-sung throws out a foot to pause the circling motion of the desk chair that Sungmin's sitting on. Too lost in thought, Sungmin didn't realize how aggressively he'd been spinning until the chair stops, but his surroundings don't. It goes around and around and around. Ji-sung asks him, "What are you thinking about?" Sungmin blinks a few times to get Ji-sung to clearly come into focus, concentrating hard on the pout of his lips and the knit of his brows. "I'm thinking about the systemic oppression of women in the workforce." "Actually?" "No," Sungmin sighs. "I'm thinking about breaking up with you." Ji-sung sets his Nintendo Switch aside. The soundtrack to Breath of the Wild plays softly in the background, muffled slightly by Ji-sung's periwinkle bedsheets. "Actually," Ji-sung repeats, only softer this time. "Now's as good a time as any with graduation coming up." Sungmin hates sounding so clinical about the whole thing, but it's probably for the best. He should keep his emotions out of this, especially since his emotions are what got him into this predicament in the first place. You're under way less scrutiny at university. You can more easily blend into the crowd or disappear at will. I guess that's true. You don't have to announce it or anything. You could simply delete the photos of Ji-sung from his Instagram grid. Naturally, people will think what they want to think. But Sungmin wouldn't mind leaving the photos up. They were happy memories once. Snapshots of his life during a certain period of time. Evidence of something he might have almost had. If anyone asks, we can tell them it was a mutual split. That way we can still be friends. Ji-sung nods twice, the first one halting, the second one much more firm. "Good friends," he supplies. There's something so resolute about Ji-sung's expression that it makes Sungmin sad. His heart constricts with every beat. It's a good thing Sungmin didn't go through with his plan to confess today, then. Ji-sung would have definitely turned him down. "Anyways," Sungmin stands. He quickly unclenches his fists to appear marginally less like a wounded animal beating a hasty retreat. His voice sounds even, at least. "I should get going. See you later." "Later." Sungmin blindly grabs a backpack from the small pile they've left at the foot of Ji-sung's bed. It's heavier than expected, but Sungmin figures it's because everything else feels so much heavier too. His plodding footsteps out Ji-sung's apartment door, dragging himself across the street towards home, heavy-limbed and slow to react when he's nearly mowed down by a cyclist. Sungmin remains in this daze until he's unzipping his backpack to put away some books, reaching into the main pocket and pausing when his fingers brush against carbon fiber fabric instead. "Huh?" Sungmin lifts out a color-blocked, webbed-designed suit. He spreads across the palm of his hand the spider logo emblazoned across the back. The realization comes to him, then. Ji-sung isn't dating Spider-Man. Ji-sung is Spider-Man. He shoves the suit back into the backpack and lets the whole thing drop to his feet with a thump. Sungmin lets out a deep breath. "Oh." Seven. It makes total sense, all things considered. The possibility had occurred to him briefly in the beginning, Sungmin being the type of person who likes to look at everything from every angle. Only he ruled out the idea of Ji-sung being Spider-Man as preposterous pretty early on. Every piece of evidence collected since then has been systematically ignored, blinders on and confirmation bias in full effect. It is only now that Sungmin realizes that while Ji-sung has never outright denied Sungmin's claim that he and Spider-Man are dating, Ji-sung's been careful to never say anything that would explicitly confirm it either. Was he maintaining plausible deniability, or simply lying by omission? Why lie in the first place? Sungmin wonders. Very easily, Ji-sung could have said thanks but no thanks to dating as a cover, and Sungmin would have been none the wiser as to the reason why. Sungmin would have maintained his suspicions, of course, but he had already made clear to Ji-sung that his secret was safe. Sungmin wasn't going to tell anyone. There was no reason to engage with Sungmin beyond that. Was Ji-sung keeping tabs on Sungmin, or is it something else? Theory 1. It's a classic case of keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Ji-sung keeps Sungmin around to make sure he doesn't squeal. But isn't that too high of a risk? At any point, Sungmin could have connected the dots, seen something he wasn't supposed to, paid too much attention to something incriminating that Ji-sung let slip. The fact that it took Sungmin this long to accidentally grab the wrong backpack is a stroke of luck at best. So why would Ji-sung put himself in a position to be found out by Sungmin again and again? Theory 2. Something else. Something that Sungmin is working out in his brain, but he needs to collect a few more pieces of information first. Calmer than he feels, Sungmin calls up Ji-sung and tells him to meet me at the park or on the block right now. What's this about? I have something that I want to ask you. The park at night is empty. The crescent moon above his head is shaped like a toenail clipping, shedding very little light. Sungmin can barely make out the fog of his breath with every exhale, 35 in total while waiting for Ji-sung to show up. It's freezing out here, Ji-sung says, scurrying towards Sungmin in socks and sandals that scuffle loudly across the rubber-tiled ground. You couldn't have asked me your question over the phone? With his 36th breath, Sungmin asks, did you confess first, or did Spider-Man? Ji-sung answers, neither. He deliberately leaves it at that. This is normally where Sungmin would have filled in the blank. The two of them came together naturally, so obvious in their feelings that no words needed to be exchanged, etc., etc., etc. He was always so eager to make sense of everything Ji-sung says, to live in a world that is strictly black and white. But Sungmin knows better now. Who made the first move? Neither of us, Ji-sung answers again. Because it's too dangerous? Ji-sung nods, clearly suspicious of where this line of questioning is going, but indulging Sungmin anyways as best and as honestly as he can. This is Sungmin's second theory, this is his something else. Han Ji-sung, because of who he is, will never make the first move. Not when it comes to Sungmin. Because Ji-sung is Spider-Man, and Spider-Man can't have emotional attachments like that. Can never make himself vulnerable or allow someone to be that vulnerability. But in the same way that Ji-sung is Spider-Man, Spider-Man is also Ji-sung, and Ji-sung is a boy who likes another boy. Ji-sung likes Spider-Man so much that he's stupid about it. Stupid enough to exist in some indefinite limbo forever than tell Sungmin how he actually feels. Because of who he is, Ji-sung will never make the first move. So it's a good thing that Sungmin is stupid about Ji-sung too. You know what's really dangerous? Sungmin boldly raises a gloved hand to Ji-sung's face and watches as it flushes with heat. Fuck it, he thinks. Your cheeks. There's too much surface area for frostbite. Ji-sung looks like he's about to say something back, but the sentence dies on his lips when Sungmin leans in closer, trying not to go cross-eyed as the distance between them halves and halves until it's basically negligible. Sungmin's breath ghosts against pinkened skin. So much surface area for a kiss. Sungmin really hopes his second theory is correct. The end. Thank you for listening.